Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. It is Friday, October 24th, 2014, and I'm Leanne McAdoo. Here's what's coming up tonight.
Tonight, the White House sends out emergency alerts amidst Ebola concerns. Then, could November elections be swayed by phony votes? And a history of IRS abuses. That's next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
And let's just have a big round of booze for Alex Jones. Turn the mic on. Booze! Ah! Ah! It's horrible.
This is breaking news. New York and New Jersey have established a mandatory Ebola quarantine for any travelers who are coming in from West Africa. Now, this is following confirmation that a doctor who contracted Ebola was in New York. The new procedures were announced by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. It goes above and beyond the guidelines that are established by the federal government. Now, these new procedures do not ban flights from West Africa from entering the country, but they say we do believe it's appropriate to increase the current screening procedures from people that are coming from these affected countries. They believe it is within the state of New York and the state of New Jersey's legal rights. Now, travelers that are affected from West African countries will be subject to a mandatory 21-day quarantine at a government-supervised facility. Specific procedures for the quarantine and hospitalization are going to be determined by New York and New Jersey health departments. Basically, they're saying voluntary quarantine is an oxymoron. If you are asking people to quarantine themselves, they've seen what happens, and they say it's too serious a situation to leave it to the honor system. The two U.S. nurses who contracted Ebola have been declared clear of the disease today. They were cured of this disease. Nurse Nina Pham was actually healthy enough to leave the hospital and meet up with Obama for a little hug session in the Oval Office. Now, she did take the time to thank Dr. Kent Brantley, who once again donated his plasma to help her recovery. Pham didn't have any of these experimental Ebola vaccines. Now, we've reported before on how this cure is kind of being overlooked, of course, you know, in favor of these experimental vaccines that are set to hit the market. The World Health Organization reports that millions of doses of experimental Ebola vaccines will be produced by the end of 2015. And these vaccines could be offered to health workers on the front lines in West Africa as soon as December of 2014. Now, the World Health Organization cautions that vaccines, they won't be a magic bullet for ending the outbreak. Again, they stress there is no proven cure or vaccine for Ebola. That is, of course, until they can patent the magic blood of these people who are able to fight this disease. So we've got millions of doses of experimental vaccines coming our way. States say that they're all geared up. They're ready to deal with this disease. And every day, once again, we're being placated, being told there's nothing to worry about, nothing to worry your little heads about. So why this mysterious emergency alert that was sent out? It was sent out from the federal government today. It interrupted TV viewers. They were told to stand by for an emergency message, and they were also warned not to use their phones. TV channels automatically changed to local news stations, but no White House message ever came. Obviously, this prompted confusion and concern. We're in the middle of an Ebola crisis, so people were very concerned about this. Now, an AT&T spokesperson did come out and say that that message was sent out erroneously by a mistake by a nationally syndicated radio station. However, the emergency alert system is mandatory by law. Stations have no control or power to block the signal once it's sent out. And the federal government is the only place where these emergency alert systems can be generated from. The federal government is the only one that can send out these emergency alerts. So that begs the question, where did this come from? Why can't people use their phones? And was this just a trial run? Obama raised some eyebrows earlier in the week when he talked about dealing with this Ebola crisis as a trial run for a possible deadlier airborne disease that could be coming in the future.
There may come a time sometime in the future where we are dealing with an airborne disease that is much easier to catch and is deadly. And in some ways, this has created a trial run for federal, state, and local public health officials and healthcare providers, as well as the American people.
So obviously those mysterious comments are going to pique the interest of people who are concerned about how the CDC is preparing to quarantine people who are even just showing signs of some sort of airborne disease. If it's not Ebola, it's some other deadly coming airborne disease. But where is this abundance of caution? That's the new buzzword that we're hearing, talking points, abundance of caution. Where is the abundance of caution being used when we are looking at shocking video of police officers there in New York? They were dumping their protective gear in a public trash can after leaving the area near the apartment of the Ebola doctor, Craig Spencer. Now, the clip shows the officers placing their gloves, face masks, and caution tape in the trash. And then they're just walking away from the scene outside of his apartment. Now, it's not known whether these two officers were actually inside of the apartment or if they were just clearing things that were from outside of it. But come on, I mean, wouldn't you at least not want to help spread the contagion of fear by dumping your hazmat materials in a public trash can right there, an open air trash on the streets of New York? But the CDC has once again reassured us that their response to this Ebola outbreak has been more than effective. All the measures they're taking have been more than effective. Absolutely no irony today when they said this during the House committee hearing on the Ebola response. No irony in the fact that both Thomas Duncan and this new doctor both made it through the enhanced screening. Now, here's a tweet from the CDC last night confirming that Dr. Spencer went through the new enhanced screening at JFK. Tony Cartolucci writes, "Because of Ebola's incubation period, screening at airports is perhaps the least effective measure a state could put in place." And this is, of course, what we've been saying this entire time. And it just really doesn't make any sense. This honor system of people self-quarantining is not working, let alone the guy couldn't even make it the full 21 days of this self-quarantine. He had to go bowling. But even those people that were there defending the whole self-quarantine can't make any sense of this.
He called authorities and was isolated very expeditiously.
So you don't think he was contagious those 48 hours before?
From what we understand, people are infectious when they have a fever, not beforehand.
So why did you close the bowling alley? Why did they, you know, put other people in quarantine? If he's not contagious because he showed a fever and he's a doctor and he says he didn't have a fever until that morning, why did you have to shut down the bowling alley?
You know, it's a good question, and I think it gets to your issue of confidence. We really want to move in an abundance of caution. The bowling alley is closed so that it can be cleaned and decontaminated out of abundance of caution, and I expect it will be open and people will be bowling in the not-too-distant future.
You could have gotten sweaty, right? And you can transfer this via sweat, right, for that secretion could actually hold the Ebola virus for some time, correct?
So the bowling alley is being cleaned out of an abundance of caution, yes.
So there's no way. Nobody has to worry that was at the bowling alley the night before. You can't catch it from bowling. They're just quarantining the entire facility and decontaminating it out of an abundance of caution. But there is no abundance for the troops. Now, this is where it gets weird. 3,000-plus troops are being sent to West Africa with insufficient training. We've already reported they're getting about 4 hours of Ebola training. And if by chance one of these soldiers does come in contact with the disease and it does come down with Ebola-like symptoms, well, let's hope that they're lucky enough to catch a flight.
Okay. How many aircraft are outfitted to move these individuals out of country in the event that this happens?
So for controlled movement, any aircraft can do because, as been pointed out, they're asymptomatic and not contagious at that point. So any aircraft can do. For at the present time, the only aircraft that can move the symptomatic patients is the State Department's Phoenix Air contract that you've seen moving the other Ebola.
And how many patients can that aircraft hold?
We're told, the aircraft can hold one at a time and can do 4 movements a week at this point.
4 movements a week?
Yes, sir.
Is that sufficient?
No, there is no need for an abundance of concern when it comes to protecting the lives of our troops, who are once again putting their lives on the line to help with this health crisis. No, they only need an abundance of caution when they are disappearing patients from hospitals or sending out emergency alert system, accidentally, or of course, instructing healthcare workers and public servants to not even use the word Ebola. So something is definitely up, but I don't think we're going to really get to the bottom of it until after the elections. Just like we're not going to find out who is the new attorney general or how much Obamacare is going to cost until after the elections. And of course, just how sweeping this immigration reform is going to be. All that we're going to find out after the elections. Now, just a few days ago, we reported on how James O'Keefe had another of Project Veritas. He had another one of these expose videos, and there he went undercover and exposed how there was some voter fraud taking place. You'll recall that the directors of some liberal groups that are funded by Democratic super PACs were giving James the go-ahead and the thumbs up to fill in unused ballots. Well, today, James has announced that his Facebook account has been disabled. The whole thing has just been disabled. So, of course, you know, Zuckerberg must have gotten the call from his buddies there in the White House to disable this account until after the elections, of course. Now, why does this matter? Why does this matter? Who are these people that are trying to shut down anything that could show potential voter fraud? Well, fake votes could swing the election. Now, Washington Post is even asking if votes from non-citizens could decide who is going to win in the November midterms. Now, data shows that a small percentage of non-citizens or, you know, illegal aliens will actually vote, but enough do that their participation can change the outcome of close races. So that's, of course, why they're going to play down Ebola and everything else until after the election, because Obama's triple punch is going to hit America in the gut after November 4th. Now, no matter who wins or loses on Election Day, President Obama is ready with a big new push of his radical agenda the very next day. Now, he's going to have his amnesty announcement. It's going to potentially cost Americans, millions of Americans, their jobs. Their immigration officials have already put out the request for 39 million plastic ID cards over the next few years. Of course, these are going to go to DACA recipients. Then, of course, Obamacare rates, they should have been announced on October 1st, but that was purposefully delayed until November 14th. Now, analysts are projecting that premiums on the low-cost plans are going to rise by 14% next year, and a double whammy here for Obamacare exemptions. Those exemptions that were put in place for the non-compliant plans, well, those are going to expire, which means that those people that like their plans can't keep them. And then there's going to be a massive prison release. Now, you can expect 20,000 inmates to receive executive clemency in addition to the 36,000 illegal immigrant convicts that were set free in 2013. Now, most of these people will be minorities, and that is the heart of the matter here. That's why it matters that there is voter fraud going on. And that's what we really need to be focused on, is that make sure whoever you vote for coming up in November is going to be someone that can actually fight back against these triple threat sucker punch to America. Now, coming up, David Knight speaks with Mark Adams. It's going to be a very hard-hitting interview dealing with those goons at the IRS and their history of political persecution, using it as a weapon, even torturing American citizens. That's coming right up.
DNA Force.
When cells become toxic, they die early and aging sets in.
DNA Force.
No one has put together a formula that focuses directly on brain health, nerve growth factors, and optimizing your cellular energy at the same time. Just one of the key compounds, BioPQQ, is backed by major clinical studies.
DNA Force.
We now have the synergistic solution. Secure your DNA Force today at InfoWarsLife.com or call toll free 888-253-3139.
DNA Force.
Introducing the first proprietary oxygen-based intestinal cleanser, OxyPowder. Backed by FDA-approved phase 1, 2, and 3 clinical trials, All the toxins from the air, the food, the water, ultimately ends up in the gut or affects the gut. Take your health into your own hands and start cleansing your body today with Oxy Powder. Secure your Oxy Powder today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
IRS abuses against political enemies are nothing new. Now, today we're going to have the story of a whistleblowing congressman who decades ago was punished by the IRS. As we're seeing today, we see echoes in Dinesh D'Souza's persecution by the government. We see echoes of it, of course, in the Tea Party persecution that you just saw. This is a congressman that the IRS tried to get out of office by dirty tricks. When that failed, they came after him not only three times with criminal prosecutions, which he ultimately beat, but again, they came after him a fourth time, and they tortured him as part of that prosecution. Today, we're going to be talking to investigative journalist Mark Adams about the case of Congressman George Hansen, who recently died.
This is an agency that was so abusive. It chilled political speech during the 2012 election. It chilled Tea Party groups from fully engaging the issues.
The FBI has not talked to you about the lost emails of Lois Lerner.
They have not.
Has anyone at the Justice Department talked with you or anyone at the Internal Revenue Service about Lois Lerner's lost emails?
I don't know.
Here's the takeaway. Lois Lerner's trying to cover her tracks. And this guy tells us he hasn't even talked to the FBI. What kind of investigation is going on where the FBI won't even talk to the head of the agency that has this kind of stuff going on with their email exchange and won't talk to the agency that lost key evidence in a investigation that's about people's First Amendment rights being targeted? And we get these flippant answers from the commissioner. That's what bothers every single American.
The Department of Justice's investigation of this has been woefully negligent.
The biggest part of this is what involvement did the Department of Justice have as well?
Well, thank you for joining us, Mr. Adams.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Knight.
Now, what we're seeing here, it looks like, is we've got the Obama administration obviously using the IRS to target political enemies, to target people they don't like. We see actually some leadership in the GOP that doesn't like the Tea Party either. I think that's a factor in that. We've seen this kind of persecution from the same people, from the IRS, along with, and this is an important point we want to cover today, along with the Attorney General, the Department of Justice. We've seen this happen decades ago with Congressman George Hansen. That's why we've got you on to talk about that today.
Well, indeed, you're right. On a previous Alex Jones broadcast, we exposed how the IRS has gotten away with far worse than intimidating free speech. The IRS has an established history of rigging federal elections.
Yes.
This lawless agency has sabotaged selected candidates by planting lies in the media. They did this to Senator Ed Long in 1968 by planting lies in Life magazine. This outrage, by the way, that happened after the senator publicly warned how the IRS too often behaves like a Gestapo that
yes.
preys on defenseless citizens.
And Congressman Hansen's case is a very good example of this. Let's kind of take this in a timeline, because I think a lot of people have heard bits and pieces about this, how we had a congressman 30 years ago, 35, 40 years ago, who basically took on the IRS, got them angry. They came after him, got him out of Congress, put him in jail, actually even eventually got him tortured. Let's start at the very beginning, how he got the IRS angry with him.
Well, if I had to point to any single event, I would say things really came to a head in 1976 when the Teton Dam burst.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, the IRS came up with these different schemes so that they could levy taxes on the relief monies that was being supplied to the ranchers and farmers.
Right. So Congressman Hansen took on the IRS on behalf of his constituents, got that removed, the flood tax. But actually, even before that, he had written a book about IRS abuses called To Harass Our People, right?
Yes, all this sort of happened around the same time period. Mm-hmm. You're mm-hmm. right. He was fighting them on many different fronts.
Yeah, he also wrote and got passed the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, which still figures prominently today. He also was the first man to propose a flat tax because he was concerned that the complex tax code that the IRS has been given gives them a free hand to do anything to people that they want to. Essentially, if the law is sufficiently complex, some people have said, it's the same as having no law at all. And that's what we have in our IRS code. It is so complex, it's as if there is no law, so they can essentially do whatever they want to people, to political enemies. That's what's going on with the Tea Party. We see them being used to harass and intimidate political organizations. But the case of Congressman Hansen, it was very specific, very unique, and really pretty heinous, wasn't it?
Well, it was. As we said, the first real target was back in 68 with Senator Ed Long.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was Senator Joseph Montoya in 1975. They planted lies in the press about him. This time it was not in Life magazine. That was with the participation of Bob Woodward and the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the next year, 1976, IRS operatives, they used the same blueprint of destruction on Congressman George Hansen from Idaho.
Dirty tricks, essentially. Just before the election, publishing that he has tax problems, right?
That he wasn't paying his taxes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it backfired on them.
Right.
Congressman
right.
Hansen won re-election despite the IRS planted lies in the media that he wasn't paying his taxes.
And let's back up a little bit here, too, because
sure.
not only did he get them upset exposing abuses, writing a book, enacting a law, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, proposing a flat tax to basically simplify things so they didn't have that free of hand. But actually, there was an episode where Lee Roderick, who is the past president of the National Press Club, while he was vacationing in Europe with his wife, said he started talking to an IRS agent that was working over there. And, of course, the subject of Congressman Hansen came up. And he said, the IRS agent said, we're going to get him. He said, how? And he said, we have our ways.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Now, this happened, like I said, that happened after the IRS tried to sabotage his 1976 election.
Mm-hmm.
After that, the IRS retaliated again by putting Congressman Hansen through the ringer with a criminal audit.
Yes, yes.
Well, the upshot of that was it was determined he was owed a refund.
Yes, exactly. Now, yeah, and a criminal audit, that's
IRS back off? No, not one bit. It merely intensified their animosity. And as you just pointed out, they were bragging publicly how they were going to get him because we have our ways.
Yes. And as you point out, it was a criminal prosecution. You know, people, a criminal audit, people are afraid of IRS audits normally, but when they come after you for a criminal audit, that's another item entirely. So he wins and actually gets a refund when they investigate it, but it costs him a lot of money. And he's not somebody like Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi that becomes multi-millionaires while they're in Congress. This is a guy who didn't have a lot of money, so he gets into a financial situation where he needs to pay some legal expenses, and that's where his troubles start to truly begin. Tell us about that, what he did to try to get money to pay off his legal expenses.
Yes. What happened here is that he approached the Ethics Committee and asked if he could use his congressional office to raise funds to pay off these massive legal debts. They told him, no, you can't do that. So what he did next, with the advice of two attorneys, was to execute a property separation agreement with his wife, Connie, so she could engage in fundraising. All of this massive debt was now legally hers. So while George was busy being a congressman, she was at home trying to raise the capital to pay off what were now her debts. This all took place, by the way, in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1979, 2 years later, the Ethics in Government Act is passed. One of the provisions of the Ethics Act required representatives and senators now had to file disclosure forms with the Ethics Committee. And these disclosure forms had to include not only all of their financial transactions, but their spouse's finances as well. In other words, joint disclosure was now required.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that provision, that violated the property separation agreement that Congressman Hansen was abiding by 2 years before the Ethics Act was even passed.
Mm-hmm.
So he approached the Ethics Committee, and what happened was there's a mutual agreement reached with the Ethics Committee that Congressman Hansen would not include his wife's finances due to his unique legal circumstance that existed prior to the passage of the Ethics in Government Act.
Okay, so he's gone through the extra mile. He goes to the Ethics Committee. He sets up things in a legal structure so that his wife is free to pay off these legal debts. And then he gets this okayed by the House Ethics Committee on two occasions, even after they changed the rules. And still, they come after him for that. But before they do, I think it's interesting that Mr. Hunt, the silver trader, who recently died, it was just a couple of days ago, he tried to corner the silver market in 1979, 1980, and he got caught doing that. He was suspended for life with commodities training, trading, and he was also, I'm sure, got into some legal issues with the IRS. He says that he receives a blackmail letter from somebody saying that they're going to expose that he got favors from Congressman Hansen.
Yes.
And so they start an investigation on him. That lasts for 2 years, but he's cleared. I think it's kind of interesting. I wonder if Hunt was being used by some kind of a plea bargaining thing where if he would go after Congressman Hansen, they would essentially let him off of maybe some of his IRS problems. I'm sure he had some IRS problems after the major debacle in trying to corner the silver market failed. But, you know, I think that's another issue there where they're coming in. They come after time after time after time after Congressman Hansen. He's vindicated, but his legal fees continue to pile on top of each other. They're bankrupting him through the defense of his innocence.
Yes. Your speculation is interesting. I don't think they cut any deal with Nelson Bunker Hunt. However, there was an employee of his, Arthur Emmons, and it appears that he, in fact, was an agent provocateur for the government.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that this would just kind of come out of the blue. They would fight over it for 2 years. And again, he would be exonerated just like he was with the dirty tricks before the election, with the criminal audit from the IRS. But then it gets to somebody who's very much in the news today, and that's James Cole, the current Deputy Attorney General at the Department of Justice, the person who's right under former Attorney General Eric Holder, who just left. And James Cole now comes into this picture 20, 35 years ago, I guess. Maybe it's about 35 years ago. He comes into this picture now with a prosecution coming after this separation agreement. Tell us about that.
Okay. Here's what happened. Because of the blackmail attempt, that was a pretext then to investigate the congressman. And as you pointed out, James Cole, well, there's James Cole and another attorney, Reed Weingarten. They were working in the so-called public integrity section of the Justice Department. So now they're called in to investigate this blackmail attempt. Well, after investigating Congressman Hansen for almost 2 years, they admit there was no quid pro quo between Congressman Hansen and Nelson Bunker Hunt. Hansen did not perform any tasks or execute any favors on behalf of Nelson Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
But then these headhunters, what they did was to contrive to frame a criminal case against Congressman Hansen. And the issue they used was he omitted his wife's finances on his financial disclosure documents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
this is the third criminal. This is the third time they've tried to come after him with criminal proceedings. The first two times he's been exonerated. This third time they come after him with criminal proceedings. Go ahead.
Yes. Now, to do that, they had to do several things. First, they had to ignore the fact that the Ethics Committee accommodated the congressman's filings due to his unique legal circumstance. They also had to ignore the fact that when the Ethics and Government Act was passed, if there were genuine violations here, there were supposed to be civil sanctions imposed.
Yes.
Not criminal sanctions.
Yes.
So here's what they did. Weingarten and Cole, they contrived a criminal case against Congressman Hansen by invoking a catch-all provision in criminal law. It's 18 U.S.C. 1001. Essentially, it says it's illegal to submit a false document to the government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in order to appreciate here the scope and depth of the treachery that was used to ensnare Congressman Hansen, we also have to consider other high-profile cases that were taking place during that time. Now, when in 1984, this time, this is when Ed Meese was appointed to the position of Attorney General by President Ronald Reagan. During his confirmation hearings, it was revealed that Ed Meese had not included his wife's finances on his financial disclosure filings.
Yes.
He said that he had inadvertently failed to list them, and he was in the process of amending his financial disclosure.
Because he got caught. Exactly. But they give him a pass for the same thing that they are going after Congressman Hansen for. And it's a civil violation in the case of Congressman Hansen, but they go after him criminally. Even though they give Ed Meese, who has been Ronald Reagan's at this time, he has been Ronald Reagan's counselor since the beginning of the Reagan administration in 1980. He had worked with him as governor, Reagan was governor in California. Now he's going to become attorney general, and they give him a pass on that. They even actually gave him a pass on some things that did look like there were some quid pro quos in his past. He had a guy, Thomas Barrick, gave him $70,000 in order to help him sell his house. Subsequently was appointed deputy undersecretary of the interior. Another guy, John McKean, gave Meese $60,000 in personal loans. Subsequently was named to the U.S. Postal Service Board of Governors. So you got Reagan's close Confederate, essentially his legal counselor, the guy that's going to become his attorney general. He's given a pass on these things that they came after, that they falsely accused Congressman Hansen of, and giving him a pass on the nondisclosure of the money that his wife earned. Is that correct?
You are exactly correct. It gets even worse. Remember, 1984 was the election year.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Mondale was running as the Democrat for the president. He chose Representative Geraldine Ferraro as his running mate. It was determined, she was vetted out then, that indeed she had not included her husband's financial transactions on her disclosure documents. Her reason was, she claimed that she didn't understand the law. Well, in fact, her husband had many shady business dealings, including an enterprise known as Star Distributors. They were a major distributor of pornography linked to organized crime. So
So she didn't want to have that disclosed, so she basically excluded his information, and she kept it that way, didn't she? I don't think she never did disclose voluntarily his financial information. Is that correct?
She never did, and she escaped with impunity.
You know, when I was looking this up, I had forgotten about this. The New York Times article from 2008, as they were looking at Sarah Palin, who had just been picked, they said, you know, maybe McCain didn't vet her too well. Remember what happened when Mondale picked Geraldine Ferrara and all these things blew up. You know, maybe the same thing is going to happen with Palin. So they went back and they rehashed this in the New York Times, and they said that her husband had been fined $750 by the FEC for loaning $110,000 to her campaign, her congressional campaign in 78. Now, that was 110 times what the legal limit was. He could have loaned her $1,000, but he loaned her $110,000 and was only fined $750. Now, her children gave her $24,000 over the $3,000 legal limit as well. Nothing happened to them. Compare that to what happened to Dinesh D'Souza today, where we see that not only did he not just get a slap on the wrist with a $750 fine, he was criminally prosecuted and is going to jail. That's similar to what we see happening with Mr. Hansen, Congressman Hansen.
Well, yes, indeed. You're right again. And it's even worse. Congressman Hansen's staff attorney, James McKenna, he researched the matter further, and he discovered, I don't remember the exact number, but it was somewhere between a fourth and a third of the members of the House of Representatives did not include their spouse's finances on their disclosure documents.
There you go.
Across the board.
Yeah, yeah.
They were allowed to amend their disclosure statements without consequence.
So very, very selective prosecution of Congressman Hansen for things that very high-profile candidates have done and that a third of the congressional candidates have done as well. But they come after him, and not even for the civil penalty, but for the criminal penalty. So then tell us what happens.
Yes. Senator Hatch summarized it quite well in an article that he wrote titled George Hansen and Congressional Intent. And here's his final paragraph. He says, George Hansen has lost his recent reelection attempt by less than 100 votes, a loss undoubtedly attributable to his criminal trial. This is a tragic mistake. We certainly should not compound this error by unconstitutionally sending him to prison. Mm-hmm. But yet, Congressman Hansen, the one who worked directly with the Ethics Committee to reconcile his filings commensurate with his unique legal situation, he ends up being prosecuted by James Cole at the Justice Department.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And James Cole, who is now the Deputy Attorney General, the second highest, actually, I guess right now, until he resigns, he's announced that he's going to resign as well. So at the moment, I guess he is the highest ranking person in the Department of Justice. Now, he is ultimately convicted in a rigged trial because the district judge would not allow correspondence between Congressman Hansen and the Ethics Committee that would have exonerated him. They keep that evidence that would have exonerated him out of the trial. So it's a rigged trial. And he's found guilty. He is sent to jail for a year and a half. I think he's fined $40,000. But the story doesn't end there, does it?
No, indeed it does not. And you are right. In 1986, after many years of fighting government injustices, he is sent to prison. His crime? He didn't commit any crime. The government had to manufacture one in order to ensnare him. And one journalist who was really on top of all this, he was working at the time for Human Events, and that's Stanton Evans. And he explained the odious situation succinctly. This is what he wrote. In 1977, he, George Hansen, and his wife executed a property division in the state of Idaho so that she could raise money apart from his campaign finances, to pay legal bills. This division was reported to and ratified by the Ethics Committee of the House of Representatives. Then Evans goes on to write, apologists for Ferraro argue that her cases and Hansen's are different, as indeed they are. Hansen, he had legal grounds for not reporting his wife's financial
dealings. Right. Yeah.
He had the advice of two attorneys saying he should not report them, and the response from the Ethics Committee that was attested by Representative Wiggins saying that, yes, this was proper conduct.
So let's bring this back. Let's bring this kind of into the future here. So we've got a situation where the Department of Justice persecutes this guy. And, of course, Ed Meese, who at that time is the head of the Department of Justice and who himself was guilty of far more egregious offenses than Congressman Hansen, he lets that stand. And Congressman Hansen continues to try to clear his name, and eventually the Supreme Court does exonerate him of all these charges, but that takes till 1995. It's 11 years later, after he's been fined $40,000, after he's out of Congress, after he's served a year and a half in prison. And so what we see here is we see the Republican administration of Ronald Reagan and Ed Meese essentially doing the same kinds of dirty tricks against somebody who speaks up trying to reform the IRS. And now we bring this into the future. We see that the leadership of the GOP is really not doing much to put pressure on stopping these persecutions of Tea Party people because, in my opinion, I think they're just as much of a pariah to the current GOP leadership as someone who wanted to shake up the IRS was to the Republican leadership 30, 40 years ago.
Well, indeed, yes, that's true. And while all this was happening, meanwhile, the media whores were busy publishing articles claiming that George Hansen was sent to prison for lying on his ethics forms.
Yeah, which they didn't even allow in evidence.
Media lie that was sold to the public.
Yes, yes. And they could get away with it in those days as well. One of the things that he tried to do was to come up with a congressional accountability project that would inform people instantly of how their congressman voted, because in those days they didn't have the internet. Today we can do that. And even though we understand where this corruption, this criminal behavior is coming from, we apparently are still impotent to do anything about it, because not only do we see the same practices being done decades later, but even the same people being rewarded and promoted. So you've got James Cole, who is head of the division, doing these persecutions, and not even prosecutions, they were persecutions of Congressman Hansen. He's now been rewarded in a Democrat administration, being put as the second person in charge of the Justice Department.
Indeed, you're right. And as you say, today we have the fulminating IRS Tea Party scandal that supposedly is being investigated by the FBI and the Justice Department. Last August, Jay Sekulow, he's the chief attorney at the Center for Law and Justice, he declared, and the truth is that evidence clearly shows the DOJ was involved in the coordinated targeting and was directly engaged with IRS officials, including Lois Lerner, to piece together criminal prosecutions against Tea Party clients without any evidence of wrongdoing. Now, last February, Jay Sekulow bitterly complained to Congress that the FBI had not interviewed any of his Tea Party clients. At that time, not a single Tea Party victim was interviewed by the FBI. Last June, when Sekulow learned about the coordinated effort involving the Public Integrity Section, and the IRS working together to try to contrive criminal prosecutions against the Tea Party, he advised all of his clients, do not submit to any interviews from the FBI. Now, last July, when he was testifying, James Cole, he made remarks to Congress saying that
the career people we have at the Department of Justice are really some of the best and most honest lawyers I've ever seen. The amount of integrity that's there is really quite astounding.
And yet, here we have this other group who also has been investigating the Justice Department. They say hundreds of Justice Department attorneys violated professional rules, laws, or ethical standards. Last July, James Cole testified to Congress.
If somebody brought to our attention evidence of a crime, we would, of course, look into it. But if somebody wanted us to target somebody because of their political beliefs, we would not go down that road.
Well, here is how Congressman George Hansen describes the Justice Department. The kingmakers at the Justice Department play selective politics. But the degree depends upon whether they want to control you, teach you a lesson, terminate your career, or destroy you. That's from the grave of George Hansen. James Cole, you putrid, bloated pile of rotten maggot scum. Thanks for the interview. After looking at that picture of James Cole, I feel an urgent need to get my stomach pumped.
Oh, Mark, we're almost out of time, but I want to bring this up today because most of the people that have heard about Congressman Hansen, the main thing that they're thinking about is the torture that he underwent. And we haven't talked about that yet because that's part of the next thing that they did to him. You know, he fights for 11 years to clear his name, and it looks like, obviously, he's going to be exonerated. He ultimately was by the Supreme Court. But before that happened, just as it was about to happen, they bring another action against him of bank fraud charges. And that judge was far more egregious in his behavior, I believe, than the previous judge who just basically convicted him by keeping information out of the trial that would have exonerated him. This judge comes after him. I would say this is the penalty phase because now this time he gets a much longer jail sentence and he is tortured in the process leading up to the trial as well as afterwards. Tell us about that.
Well, that actually took place after the trial when he was convicted before a crooked judge. And this took place in Idaho. Now, when they railroaded Congressman Hansen to prison the first time, he was in prison in the federal facility in Petersburg, Virginia. So after the second kangaroo conviction, which took place in Idaho, then they decided, well, all right, let's get him back out to Petersburg in Virginia. So they did. They took a month doing it.
And during that month, nobody knew where he was. His attorneys didn't know where he was. His wife didn't know where he was. They disappeared him out of the system. And what they did was they used a form of torture that they usually reserve for violent, uncontrollable criminals, basically shackling them in a very tight manner that cuts off circulation to their hands and to their feet.
They did that, and to ensure that that happened, what you just described, they also attached a black box to the chains to keep them tightened. And then they would leave him like that for 12, 14, 18 hours a day.
Wow, that's just amazing. So, you know, when we come forward today and we look at what just was brought to light earlier this week, we see that The Guardian reported that a U.S. judge has ordered the American government to identify what was happening, give an explanation for 2,100 pictures that they have of prisoners who are being tortured in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we have the Obama administration defending what the Bush administration did. Rather, they're not even using it for political advantage, but they're basically saying, you can't see this. Should we be surprised when 35 years ago, our American government persecuted both Republicans and Democrats persecuted someone who stood up to the system, pointed out the injustices of the IRS, and he got prison and tortured in the process and had his life destroyed.
That is indeed correct. And all of this, so much of it, comes back to James Cole. What was revealed earlier this year by Judicial Watch were emails that showed how back in 2010, 4 years ago, how the Public Integrity Section was colluding with the IRS to try to figure out a way to rig prosecution on Tea Party organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting to me to see these public integrity organizations. You know, here in Texas, we have a very high-profile case. It's gone national now because it's resulted in the indictment of Governor Perry because we had the head of the Public Integrity Unit get very, very drunk and in the process get physically, verbally abusive as part of her arrest. That went viral. And after that, the governor said, unless she resigns, I'm not going to give any more money to this so-called Public Integrity Unit. And because of that, now they've indicted him. So, I mean, that's the kind of upside down society we live in. I mean, I'm sure there's things that there are things in terms of Gardasil and other things like that that Governor Perry has done that I think people ought to come after him for indictment for, but not for that. So for the very thing that he did that was right, they come after him because this is where the political power is in these so-called public integrity units. That's where they go after the political opponents, isn't it? Saying that they're upholding integrity. It's kind of like the Patriot Act, where they destroy the Constitution saying they're going to protect us from terrorists.
Indeed. Now, Judicial Watch, well, they dragged James Cole to testify before Congress about this collaboration between the Public Integrity Section and the IRS. And
this is as part of today's, this is part of today's IRS prosecutions against the harassment against the Tea Party. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed. When Cole was testifying, he claimed that Justice Department attorneys from the Public Integrity Section, they were reaching out to the IRS in an attempt to educate themselves on the ramifications of changes in campaign finance laws. Mm. Well, last May, the Oversight Committee interviewed two lawyers from the Public Integrity Section, Richard Pilger and Jack Smith. During his interview, Richard Pilger refused to answer 34 questions submitted to him. Jack Smith, who is the current chief of the Public Integrity Section, he also refused to answer critical questions. So if there is nothing inappropriate in this coordinated effort between the so-called Public Integrity Section and the IRS, why is it shrouded in so much secrecy?
Yes, exactly.
Now, what happened last summer, Judicial Watch, they issued this statement. The DOJ has been corrupt. Justice Department officials might themselves be implicated in coordinating a campaign to potentially jail Tea Party organizers.
Yes, yes, exactly. And that's where it's ultimately going to go. It's all about persecuting your enemies. As I said before, if you've got a law that is sufficiently complex, it's the same as having no law at all. And so it's been decades that we've had governments using the IRS to punish their political opponents. Congressman Hansen's example is one of the best examples we could have. It's why this is such an important story for people to see, and we can see the repercussions of it in the current day as we see Dinesh D'Souza being attacked criminally for things that other people are doing and at the most getting a civil fine for. We see them doing the same thing to the Tea Party organizations, building up to not just harass them, but to criminally prosecute them. That's why we need to have reform. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Mark. And we'll be looking forward to your further investigative journalism about the IRS and about Congressman Hansen.
Thank you for the time that you put me on the air.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Good day.
Well, and I should put in as a footnote that even though he was convicted the fourth time and he, I believe, did not have the will or the energy to exonerate himself, many people who have looked at that case, who have reviewed it, say they believe that was a false conviction as well. Well, that's it for tonight's Nightly News. Join us weeknights, 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
City of Austin tap water versus filtered City of Austin tap water.
I can, like, taste dirt in it.
God knows what's in this.
This has an aftertaste. Tastes like Austin water?
Yeah, it does. Ugh.
These people just sampled City of Austin tap water straight from the faucet. Next, we had them try a sample of tap water filtered with a ProPure G2.0 filtration system.
High quality H2O.
That one is better.
Tastes like nothing.
Yep, I know what good water tastes like. It's good water.
Most tap water contains added substances like fluoride, chlorine, Monsanto's deadly pesticide, glyphosate, and many others. Studies prove that these substances are linked to an assortment of major health issues, including tooth decay, lowered IQ, and even cancer.
It tastes like you're drinking out of the lake when you're drinking tap water.
Yeah, it has that processed flavor to it.
The ProPure G2.0 filtration system removes these deadly substances and many more, leaving only fresh-tasting, deliciously clean water.
Okay, this is very tasty.
It's good water. Refreshing.
It's good.
Go to InfoWarsStore.com today. Use promo code WATER and save 10% off your ProPure purchase. Again, that's InfoWarsStore.com or call 1-888-253-3139.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcodes with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.